This week on the Dragzine podcast, we talked to Jason Ruckert about the life of a promoter, running the LDR series, and how to prep a racetrack. So, pull those belts tight, get ready to put them in the beans. The Dragzine podcast starts now. Welcome, everybody, to this week's episode of the Dragzine podcast. I'm your host, Senior Associate Editor Brian Wagner. This week on the show, we're talking with Jason Ruckert, who works for VP Racing Fuels and does his own little gig helping promote the Ohio Valley Prize Fight, helps with Tyler Crossno running the LDR series, drag radio races himself, is a musician, and much more. So, without further ado, let's get this drag racing party started. All right, my guest this week on the Dragzine podcast is traction expert, radio tire racer, promoter, and musician, Jason Rucker. What's up, Jason?
Hey, what's happening, man? How are you today?
Doing good, man. Doing good. Just, you know, watching it rain in Ohio like that seems like it's been doing since, you know, January.
You're right. It could be the frickin' Swamp Nationals over here. This is, I'm telling you what, in 20 years of being a VP, this is probably the wettest spring going into summer I've ever seen. I mean, it is wild how wet it is.
Yeah, I mean, you know, look at Norwalk this week and they pulled back, you know, pretty much all the sportsman racing and people kind of are, you know, throwing shade at Bader. And you look at the pictures up there and after being at that track, people don't understand, you know, when you've gotten the amount of precipitation we've got here in the Midwest, it just doesn't dry out.
Oh, I know. And it, you know, like I said, if you can't park on the asphalt over there, I mean, it's a swamp, you yeah. know, and it sucks. It sucks for the sportsmen, you know, I mean, you know, they are the backbone of, you know, NHRA and, you know, where, you know, the professionals come from. And it's just, you know, it's just, I mean, I know the fans will still get their nitro and whatnot, but you know, most fans like walking around the pits and going through the sportsman ranks and seeing everybody. So.
Oh yeah. Yeah, for sure. I love watching stock and super stock, but you know, being a racer and a promoter yourself, you know, the last thing you want to deal with is a pit full of stuck Totter homes and trailers and whatnot.
Oh yeah. I mean, it'd be a muddy mess over there. And like I said, and then, you know, you got to look back at, I think all the ruts and all that stuff. I mean, it would, you know, for Bader and the group over there, it would be an absolute nightmare to, you know, get those pits back in order. So, I mean, I think it was definitely the right call. It's a tough call, you know, with anything in the racing, you know, you're never going to make everybody happy. And I think it's funny, you and I were just talking offline a little bit about the, you know, with the internet, everybody can be an internet cowboy now because they can hide behind a screen name or, you know, on social media, and they can throw stones that they normally wouldn't, you know, say in front of their face.
Oh, yeah, totally. It's one of my friends put it the best. He said Facebook gave the town idiot a megaphone.
Oh, absolutely. They got their own soapbox. I mean, you know, like I said, it is a pretty wild deal because, like I said, to have these people that, you know, talk all that crap on social media, you confront them to their face and all of a sudden they're your best friend. Oh man, I was just kidding.
I was just kidding. Yeah. And
come on, man. It's all a joke. Quote, smiley face.
Yeah. Yeah. It's all fun and games till that person's staring in front of you. You can smell their bad breath. All of a sudden it's not funny anymore.
Not real funny anymore. Cause you're about ready to get crap knocked out of you. So. Yeah.
And you know, unfortunately/fortunately, you probably catch a little bit of that here and there, you know, being on the promotion side of things and a rulemaker. And you guys just had the prize fight, you know, last weekend. And I've been to that event before with, you know, with Litz when he got the car out down there and, you know, try to do a little bit of dirt track racing at the top end.
Sure.
And
sure.
You know, it's a fun event for sure. And, you know, how did things go with the event last weekend?
Well, like I said, you know, it was a reschedule. You know, we were actually scheduled to run the event the week of the 6th through the 8th. And of course, with the weather forecast and, you know, people are, you know, they come from all over the country to come race these events. And so we pulled the plug on it on the Tuesday. And I will say, I didn't get one negative comment, social media or personal wise. And so I think that it was a good decision, you know, between the Valley and myself, and because there was no hope. And then it did. And the best part, I hate to say best, but worst, was the best part is it did rain all weekend. So it wasn't like the horrible, you know, you pull the plug on Tuesday and all of a sudden, you know, the clouds part and it's gorgeous all weekend and you look like a fool, you know. So things went there, you know, went well. I mean, you know, and being a reschedule, sometimes you get a little bit nervous that you're going to lose people. And we did, we lost a few folks that were traveling and you know, and had other commitments. You know, Charlie Bennett has his, I call it the Shifty Shady Shootout, his no time shootout on Friday and Saturday. And he had the fields full and locked in. And a couple of the guys had sponsor commitments and couldn't make it over. But all in all, I mean, the car count was good. You know, we got blessed with just crazy weather. I mean, it was, you know, Thursday night for testing. You know, we did a Thursday night test because normally it's hotter than Hades over there. And so, you know, we said, hey, let's run it in the evening. Shoot, it got down to 51 degrees in the evening. I mean, it was 900 feet of air. It was crazy on a Thursday night. So, you know, and all weekend, the hottest it ever got on Saturday, I think, was 80 degrees. You know, so it was definitely I guess it was a great idea to reschedule it just, and we got the great weather. It's just, I don't think you'd ever be able to, you know, do that two times in a row for sure.
Oh no, buy a lottery ticket at that point. Absolutely.
Yeah. And like I said, even on Saturday, you know, there were pop-up showers everywhere. And at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, it looked like we were getting rained out at 6 PM. Like there was no hope. And I'm telling you, you'd watch the weather on the radar and it would get right, you know, about 20, 30 miles from us and it would split and it would go north. It'd go south. It was the wildest thing ever, you know, and I definitely think that's because you're in between those two rivers at Ohio Valley. And so, you know, those water, I mean, that water does stuff to the weather. And I'm not a meteorologist by any means, but, you know, we got it here in Terre Haute. We got the Wabash River. And I mean, we'll have mean old storms coming from Illinois. And all of a sudden, it'll get to the Wabash River and it'll like jump over and go 60 miles and hit Indy. Or it's, you know, we definitely got lucky. And man, did we have some, just killer racing. You know, we had, a good surprise. My buddy Kurt Johnson from Total Venue Concepts, he got a hold of me a few days before and said, man, my plans to go to Mexico got postponed. He's like, could I just come over and hang out? And I said, well, absolutely, man, come on over. And so he ended up driving over and he brought his rig with his tractor and drag and sprayer and all this stuff. And we ended up using his flat drag and his tractor. And I affectionately call it the pumpkin because it's a big orange Kubota. And so, but he got to see what the magic was over there at Ohio Valley. I mean, that's the cool part about that track is it's like a little diamond in the rough. You know, it's the jewel of the Midwest that people really don't know about. When you see how flat and awesome that all concrete surface is and what a cool setting it is. It's like a junior bowling green with all the trees around you, you know, and everything. I mean, like, so if you've been there, you've seen it. So Kurt came over and it's funny. He had just rolled in there right after Jim Howe went, you know, unloaded off the trailer and went a 408 in his blown Camaro and LDR trim. And he was like, well, I guess I don't need to be here. I said, hey man, you've come to the Fun Nationals. It's time to just hang out. So it was way cool.
Oh yeah. That's the cool feel about that event is it's definitely the Fun Nationals. You know, you're racing, but it doesn't have that event just doesn't have that on edge feel. It's like a Friday night kind of, almost like up here locally at Pacemakers, like the gamblers race things, like, all right, well, we're going to go make some hits and we're going to race. You know, it's just, it's fun, which I think that's important to bring that element back to heads up racing it in some aspects. Cause some people just, you know, they take it a little bit too seriously at times. It should be serious, but I mean, it's not like it's, you know, fuel racing.
Well, absolutely. I mean, you know, you've got to be serious. These guys got a lot of money in these cars, whether it's a DXP 235 car to a limited drag radial to an RVW car, you know. I mean, everyone's got lots of their money and their time and blood, sweat, and tears invested in it, you know. But still, it's got to be a good time, you know. And there's nothing worse than going to a race and it just being, you know, I don't know. I mean, there's some of the events we go to nowadays that are just, they're so big and it's just you know, you're always on edge. You don't know if your class is going to get canceled for qualifying. You don't know, you know, here, like I said, we had a test from 5 to 11 on Thursday, got done, had a few beers, hung out, you know, and in history has shown us that on Friday during the day at the prize fight, it's always 100 degrees. And so we didn't schedule anything on track till 4:30 in the afternoon. Well, we just got, kind of got, broadsided by the fact that it was 70 degrees all day. And so I did catch a little flack that we weren't testing during the day on Friday, but, we weren't scheduled. We didn't have EMTs. That wasn't the thing that the track had scheduled. So all day, some people went sightseeing around Fort Knox. They just hung out, got their cars serviced, ready to go, had some lunch, grilled out. I mean, it was a really chill Friday. And then, like I said, we got through Friday night qualifying and, reset the record in LDR with Neil Hawkins and Xavier McBride's Devil Horse, big old 5.3 nitrous deal. He goes 4.04, like it was nothing. So I definitely think it legitimized some of the issues that we had at Tyler's race over there at Bowling Green with some of the, the naysayers on the clocks and whatnot, where, Devil Horse went out there and went 0.06 at Bowling Green. I think he went 0.09 at Huntsville and went 4 here in better weather. So, I definitely think that we've got a really good group of cars in the limited drag radial deal right now that are, it's not being dominated by twin turbo big blocks, which is the fear in a lot of these, startup heads up classes.
Yeah. Let's talk about LDR a little bit, because that is one of my favorite heads up classes right now, just because of the sheer variety that you have in that class. And that, making the rules for that is not an easy task, to make sure that you keep that parity, and you're going to make racers mad. And that's, that's part of the gig, because us racers can sometimes need saving from ourselves. And from what I see, what you and Tyler do, you get the people that want to try to legislate prosperity in a class by complaining online, and you guys do a great job of saying, prove it. And then when they prove it, you make the adjustment accordingly.
Well, yeah. And, I've caught a lot of crap over the 4 years of the LDR deal, because I do race in the class. But the whole purpose of the class was that, for me, was that I was outgunned in Radio Versus the World. I wasn't able to spend the thousands upon thousands to keep up with the Joneses. But yet here I had a car that, I'd have to spend thousands to drop back to X275 and whatnot. So, we based it off the original Outlaw drag radial rules. But at that time, we'd also had, Outlaw 275 come into play. And so, the Outlaw 275 stuff was a little bit more lenient on rules wise than what Outlaw drag radial was, but to morph the two together, we kind of had to, you couldn't just like, one of the rules in Outlaw drag radial used to be, it had to have the stock front suspension that came with the car. Well, in Outlaw 275, they allowed struts on anything and whatnot. And so, our thought, Tyler and I, our thought was that, you can't tell a guy that's been racing an Outlaw 275 who's got struts on a Nova that all of a sudden he's no longer legal. Our goal was to have a melting pot to bring all these, I call it the land of misfit toys, like on the Rudolph thing, all of us misfit toys that we had no place to go, to bring us to a place that we could race and not have to go out and spend thousands to do it. Now, granted, it's the nature of the beast. Guys are going to spend the money for the latest, greatest and whatnot. I mean, you can never stop that, but you don't want to say, hey, here's a new class. Now you got to go cut your front end up so that you can be competitive. And so I can tell you, with straight honesty, that if Outlaw 275 would have never been a class, the rules in limited drag radial would definitely be a lot tighter than they are right now, because, we wouldn't have opened up the front end rules like we have and things like that. But to morph the classes together and to have the cars be able to come over, we kind of had to be a little lenient on some things. But I think we've done a good job. Like I said, I catch a lot of crap for racing in the class, but that also means I know what these cars will do. My twin turbo buddies, they know that I'm not easy on the twin turbo cars, and because I have one, I know the possibility and the potential of these things. So, I will tell you with all honesty, and most of the racers in the group know, I mean, I care more about the class than my own personal racing, and that's 100%. I mean, because, on the personal side, it's awesome to have all the guys out there racing in the class and a place for them to race, and giving all my friends and people, you know, a good place to race. But also on the business side, you know, if we're not racing, we're not buying race fuel, and I'm not putting shoes on my kids' feet, you know. So, you know, and so to keep the parity, and this year, you know, I know I'm a little rambling here, but this year has really stepped up. And we've known that other combos out there could be potential hitters in limited drag radio, but you know, you've kind of seen that the twin turbo big blocks are have kind of been at the front for the last few years. And then this year, man, you got, you know, Jim Howe, you know, really got his program together, and he's coming out and, you know, keeping it together and running great numbers. And then of course, you know, Neil and D come out of the grudge world with the devil horse, and they're out here, they're the class of the field. And look at Chad Henderson comes out and he's gone 410 this year in his nitrous combo, and heck, another one, you know, Ducky Johnson's car that Jeff Cooner's driving, that 68 Firebird, that's a small block Ford with a single turbo on it, and he went a 415 at the prize fight. And, you know, so guys are figuring out their stuff. And I mean, you know, we had, you know, Mustang Mike had the Pro Charger deal figured out. You know, he was going 414 with the twin Pro Chargers. And Don Burton 4 years ago went a 414 with a big block and a Pro Charger. So, I mean, all the combos out there, we think the parity is pretty close. Yeah, there's going to be some mid-season rule adjustments, and people are going to get, you know, pissy about it, but the other side of it is the adjustments aren't going to cost a lot of money. You know what I'm saying? We're not going to go out there and say, oh, your combo's banned all of a sudden. You know, it's hey, you know, let's throw a little weight here, let's do some stuff here, let's, you know, things that don't cost a lot of money, but let's, you know, we don't want that 390 class yet. We're not ready for that. You know, we guys are that are still running 20s need to be competitive. You know what I'm saying?
Oh yeah, no, that totally makes sense. And your guys' approach is right, especially when you say, you know, stuff that's not going to cost a lot of money, and racers are going to get grumbly about it. But again, it's the I'm my own worst enemy kind of thing, that they need to realize that you need to keep a class healthy, and there's going to be a little bit of pain. I mean, that's just how it is to keep parity there, and it's a very tight rope to walk, because you don't want to punish the people that have stuff figured out, but at the same time, you don't want to scare guys that, you know, might be a 420 car from coming to the party because that, you know, they don't think they can run quick enough. So it's a tight rope to walk, and I think it, you know, at least from my kind of observational point of view, it's very important to do that, even if it's going to make a few people angry, because you got to do what's important for the greater good to keep the class healthy.
Well, and that's it. And you have to look at the potentials. You have to look at, you know, let's say, you know, you got a car, you know, I'll use Devil Horse. You know, I mean, that car is out there running 4.0s like it's a bracket car. You know, now let's say we put some weight on to try to, you know, bring it back, you know, a little bit. You know, the guy that's over there now that's building a nitrous car that's never been out and ran the car is going to go, well, that's crap. You know, I can't believe you're adding weight. You know, well, look, you've got a team that's worked very, very hard, and they've run this car thousands of laps in the grudge world and the no time stuff. They know the car. They, you know, they've worked on it. They know what they're doing. So, you know, yeah, you don't want to penalize them for that, but you also need to realize that, you know, we're again trying to keep a class, keep some parity, keep, you know, more interest, you know. And again, you look at some of the other classes, how they've morphed into these, you know, professional classes. Like, I think Radio vs. the World is one of the most awesome classes out there. But that, I want to say the normal guy, that's tough. And now, don't get me wrong, people are going to say, well, limited drag radio is still expensive too. It is, but it's not to the point where I don't think a lot of us in the LDR ranks can go out there and burn up an engine and qualifying and have another engine ready to go and put in the car for eliminations. You know, you burn an engine up, you're drinking Busch Light and hanging out the rest of the weekend. So.
Heads up racing and affordable are two words that will never go together. People need to realize that. Period. End of discussion.
Yeah, and it doesn't matter what class you're in. I mean, I just got, you know, at the prize fight, you know, Martin Connolly, you know, and Eric Mitchell, you know, with their little orange Pro Charge car. I mean, in DXP 235, they went a 501. The record was an 03, and they ended up, you know, which they set back at Bowling Green, and they're a 10th ahead of the rest of the field right now, you know. And I guarantee you they've done their homework, and they got Bischoff on board, who, you know, is one of the best engine builders out there. They've got money and time wrapped up in, I mean, on testing, someone said on testing, they go, they thought they wore the car. They made 15 laps in testing on Thursday. I mean, they wore the thing plumb out, but you know what, it shipped. They set the record. They won the race. I mean, you know, there you go.
I need people out there right now to pause, rewind, and listen to that. Again, the complaint about rules. They made a lot of hits testing. That's what it takes to go fast. A pocketbook helps, but you can't.
Oh, it does.
But you cannot expect rulemakers in any class, whether it's 384-year-old, X275, LDR, you know, anything, to make the rules where everybody has a chance. It doesn't work like that. You have to test and figure out what your car likes. Like those guys with the Devil Horse car. I remember we saw when Wolf and I saw that car at the Bowling Green, we're like, man, that's a neat wrap on that car. Who is that? And then it went out, laid down that pass, and LDR were like, okay, what's going on? That was interesting. And then, you know, like you said, the whole, you know, controversy with the timing system, and then they go to now three different tracks and back it up. You know, in the scientific world, that's some pretty good proof of an experiment.
No, like I said, that car is fast. It's awesome. I always joke with Xavier, you know, the owner. He's a grudge guy, man. He's a no time guy. But I'm like, you got to think, you know, people are happy over here when they see a car go quick, because it's like, all right, we got to work a little bit harder. Now, you know, us rules guys, yeah, we got to do a little bit of adjustment, but you're still gonna, you know, it's not like you're saying, okay, we're not going to make you competitive anymore. You know, we just, again, you know, Tyler and myself are ingrained in this. You know, it's what we do, you know? And so we know, you know, I've been around this for, you know, I've been at VP 20 years. I've been around, and I was a bracket racer and a hot rodder before this. And same with Tyler. Tyler grew up with this. His father was a racer. You know, he's ingrained in this. So, you know, we're not dumbasses when it comes to understanding the power potential and weight and things like that and whatnot. So, you know, I think he and I are, you know, have a pretty good handle on what we're doing here. And, of course you're going to get some people again that are going to always grumble, but at the end of the day, when you come to, and you race an LDR race, it's fun. It's a good group of folks. I mean, we are all, again, we are the misfits on the island that had no place to go. And now we've got, you know, a 9-race point series. You know, we've got good support. We've got, you know, Mickey Thompson has come on board for the championship series. We're working on some other guys. I mean, just, you know, like at my event, I say my event, it's not my event. It's, you know, Ohio Valley's event that, you know, I get to have the pleasure of helping with. But, you know, like I said, you know, Mensur, you know, has been with me from day one. You know, he's come out, he knows the Fun Nationals. He's a dude, he's a bro. And he's like, yeah, I'll help you out. You know, Tommy Kirk at MagFab, you know, Andy, my chassis guy, Pro Tree Race Cars, who's Craig Sullivan's dude over at NMCA, you know, Buzz from Power Shield Coatings in Michigan. I mean, he's been around, he's been my friend for years. So, you know, and Jack at Billet Atomizer, you talk about a guy that helps out in the sport of heads up drag racing. I mean, Jack is, you know, he is ingrained in this stuff, you know. And then Matt at Redline Motorsports, you know, he's been there from day one. He's got a 190 plus mile an hour LDR car that I think we're finally figuring out is legit. If he ever gets the front half figured out, which he will, the rules maker is going to have a real hard time trying to slow down that old beast. But, and then like John Sears, you know, we all know John, and, you know, I mean, that poor guy takes a beating on the rule stuff like anybody, because he cares, he gives a crap, you know, he's really just wants to have the best parity in racing. And when you have so many different combinations, say an X275, you know, it's tough to keep it in control. But he comes out and he solely gets all the sponsorship for the DXP 235 class, man. He's got Nitrous Express and Lenny at Ultimate Converter and the guys at RC Components, Rick at Firecore 50, Dave Team Z, and Jose at Force Induction. I mean, he brings all those folks on board and they come and support the event. And then, of course, you can't, you know, another big name here, I mean, is, and then words of our famous Lee, PTC, you know, I mean, you know, Kenny LaGale, man, they help out. They do our index class at the prize fight and come out and support and race and, you know, have a good time. And, you know, another one, big one is Mark Mickey at M&M. I mean, he's, you know, quickly over the last few years become, you know, one of the biggest names in the heads up world, especially RVW, LDR, X275, you know, his converter and transmission packages. I mean, you know, he for the longest time was the biggest kept secret out there in the converter world. And he's got some of the fastest stuff out there. So again, gratuitous, or what do you call it? What did Wayne's World used to say about when they would, you know, do the sponsorship things with like the Pepsi cups or whatever, gratuitous placement of sponsorships or, yeah, you know, sponsors or whatever. So, but, you know, without these people in the industry, and again, I call them all my friends because we are all ingrained in this, and without the help of them, you can't do this stuff. And, you know, like you look at like Donald and Tyler and Mel over in St. Louis, you know, if you don't have the sponsorships for these things and the help, you know, you can't get out there and pay these kind of payouts and whatnot and get these racers to show up. So,
oh yeah, it's, if people understood what went into pulling off even up at Milan with their single Friday night series event, everything that goes into making an event work, there would be a lot less armchair quarterbacking on the internet for sure.
Yeah. Like I said, I've been with the Milan group for, you know, well, let's see here. I won one of their events in 2006, and I think we started in 2004 or 5. With the Friday night heads up program and the drag radio rules. And you know, VP's been a sponsor ever since day one. And like I said, that is that's a cool little event up there. That is probably one of the only monthly events that still draws the cars like they do and gets the spectators. And now, this year, Christine Dineen and the folks up there have brought in, you know, Kurt Johnson to, help do the track prep starting on Thursday at the Rockies rental to, you know, Friday night and then the Saturday no time stuff. And I've helped out, you know, a couple times. And so, you know, it's a great program out there. But yeah, there's a ton of, you know, back work that goes into it, getting the sponsorships over the winter time and all that. And, you know, again, they're in a great group up there because, you know, they're so close to Detroit that they've got such a good, you know, good following, and, you know, the factories come there and test at Milan and whatnot. So, you know, like I said, and I was kind of bummed that Ray didn't come down to the prize fight after I saw that he got to shake the car down at Milan up there. But I know how scheduling goes. Like I said, on reschedules, it's always a tough deal.
Oh yeah, we talked about it, and it was just the scheduling with that car right now. You know, it's funny you mentioned that Friday night deal that I went up there with him. That was the first time I've been to that, and I wrote an article about it. I was blown away by the amount of people there that was on a Friday night. And I mean, they've got some pretty good sized seating up there at Milan. It was pretty full. If you put that at like a smaller track, it had looked, you know, packed out for sure. But just, you know, unfortunately, Mother Nature shut us down with the Mayflies. But I mean, that was wild. You know, I've seen a lot of races call for a lot of different reasons, but when, you know, they said because of the Mayflies,
dude, when you're sliding around on bug guts, that's a lot of mayflies out there, bud.
Oh, it was. Well, the thing is about Milan, what people don't realize is the mosquitoes are so big up there, they'll carry off a small child if you're at the top end. I mean, it's ridiculous.
I've seen over the years at certain points 5,000 to 10,000 spectators on a Friday night up there.
Oh, it's nuts. And I mean, the level of competition was good. The track was tight. I mean, it was a good time, and it's nice when, you know, and it wasn't like, it felt like the Fun Nationals. It just sucks that it runs so late. We had some of the issues you have, but, you know, everybody's got to deal with the same conditions and whatnot, so you just kind of roll right through it.
Yeah. I don't know.
You know, and it's funny you mentioned that you race in the LDR program yourself, and, you know, your car, I think, definitely draws a lot of attention because it literally looks like a stock Oldsmobile with some drag radials bolted up to it.
Well, it is. I mean, and again, if I had it my way, that's what every LDR car would look like. But I'm kind of in the minority now. There's not a whole lot of us stock suspension cars left per se, other than, it is kind of ironic, Andy Manson, who was our record holder going into this race with the 408, he's got a stock suspension car, so that's pretty impressive.
That car's nasty.
That car is super awesome. Again, small block Pro Charger. I tells you right there real quick, small block Pro Charger, you know, twin turbo small block. Norm Chang, before he had his unfortunate accident, he'd been a 412 in a small block twin turbo car. You know, Jim Monson's out there with a small block twin turbo car. You know, Jim Howe's got a blown Hemi. You know, Xavier McBride, you know, and Devil Horse, they've got a 5.3 bore space big block Chevrolet with Jack Green helping. You know, we got Justin Martin, Matt Bell, you know, Etheridge. I mean, we've got twin turbo big block stuff. I mean, we've got cars that run all over the gamut, and they are within. And I told Tyler this yesterday, and I said, I'm still very proud to say in 4 years, the record has went from a 414 to a 404. So in 4 years, we moved a 10th on the record. That's, I think, pretty impressive.
Yeah, and when you match that against Radial versus the World in 4 years, how far is that, you know, record fallen?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that, you know, I think 4 years ago, if you went 380s, that was flying. And now what are you, 50s?
Yeah.
But I'll back there real quick. You know, when you're talking about the old Slowsmobile out there. Yeah, we are diligently working. You know, I a couple years ago, after I burned it up, you know, I ended up just taking a deep breath and backing up and punting. You know, all my cast aluminum stuff was wore out. You know, I was having to pull the engine out every couple passes. It was just, it, you know, I'm an old bracket racer, so that's not fun. And it's just Kyla and myself as a crew, you know. So she's in there, you know, taking care of the, you know, our tribe of five children, you know, mixed together, and I'm out there, you know, pulling the engine out and all that stuff, and I got so fed up. I said, you know, we need to take a break. So we started looking at other avenues, and that's when you know, Ben Menz approached me from Energy Manufacturing, you know, over there in Ohio, and said they were getting ready to do their first billet big block, and we worked a deal. I said, sign me up, let's make it happen. And the billet big block program turned into a complete Energy Manufacturing billet big block with the, you know, the billet heads, the Bissner intake, the new throttle body, the Cali's billet crank, you know. So we're staying on gas, we're staying on Q16, where everybody likes to switch to methanol, but I'm a gas guy. And so we finally got everything. I finally, you know, scrimped and saved everything. Like I said, it's taken over a year and a half. And so Tony Bischoff has all the parts. He's building a 555-inch big block with 14.5 degree heads. And so he's, you know, he's doing, I mean, Tony is second to none when, you know, in reliability. That's what I told him. I said, Tony, I said, he's like, man, we can make a lot of power here. I said, I'm cool with the power. I said, but I just want it to stay together. I said, if I want to keep it in the frame rails tour, you know, 2020. So we should hopefully have the engine ready to go in the next month or so. And then once I get it back, TRZ, I sent them my old rear end housing. They're building me a new floater rear end right now. I was having problems bending the 40 spline axles. So I decided to put a floater in it, still stock suspension. And then once I get it back, we'll roll it up to Andy at Pro Tree, hopefully, and get I'm going to have new headers built for it. The old ones were, after 5 years, they were cracking and busting and doing all that stuff. So, you know, stainless, you know, they get so hot and whatnot. So as soon as we get the new headers built, we should be, you know, ready to test. I know, I'm doing the conversion on the front, Mark, you know, the TRZ conversion where they cut the stock mount. I still had stock mounted front shocks, and now you cut the top out, and TRZ built a bracket so that you can actually run the coil over through, and you actually do a true coil over, and the spring isn't all squished against the stock frame. And so, you know, we're gonna do that, and Menser's got some magic up his sleeve. We're gonna do some new shock stuff, and hopefully, you know, be out testing by August. You know, I mean, that's kind of what I'd like to do, and be ready to maybe go to Virginia for Tyler's Shakedown event, and then end up at Ducks and get everything ready to go for 2020 starting in February. And you know, like I said, like I said, when you look at my car, it is a little bit different. I mean, I still have a a bolt-on hood and a bolt-on trunk lid and the steel doors and roll-up glass windows and whatnot, because that was a car my dad bought me 30 years ago, you know, and I think that heads-up cars should still look like cars, you know, dashboards and, you know, everything. I mean, be safe, of course, but, you know, if we got to weigh 3,300 pounds, there's no reason you can't have a thing looking like, you know, something you can take to the drive-in on a Friday night, you know.
Oh, yeah, and that adds to the coolness for sure. I mean, I like anything loud, fast, and dangerous, but seeing something that still has, you know, a lot of the stock look to it and whatnot, that definitely adds a certain level of appeal to it, absolutely.
Yeah, and you go look at any of the LDR cars, and I don't care if they are a full race piece. I mean, go look at Justin Martin's Nova. I mean, that
car's
thing
gorgeous.
It looks like a street car, you know. I mean, look at Jim Howe's car. I mean, look at Devil. I mean, look at any of them. You know, they still look like cars, and that was the whole point. I mean, I catch crap all the time for the not allowing the Pecker extenders on the front for the NHRA overhang. But I said, guys, you chose to you chose to build a Nova or a Chevy 2 or a Mustang or a G body or a, you know, I mean, that's your choice. It's what you built because you liked it. You know, don't hang a chunk of crap off the front. I mean, that looks horrible, you know. So, you know, I mean, I guess if you got a short-nosed car, you need to build something that goes a little bit faster, right? So you can beat them across the starting line or the finish line with your tires.
Yeah, take advantage of that weight, right? So. Now, switch gears here a little bit. Like you said, you've been around racing quite a bit. And, you know, There was a time where, you know, you saw you on pretty much every starting line at every major event across the country. So I'm sure you have some pretty interesting stories about things you've seen at the track. And I kind of like to pry out of you a little bit. What's one thing that you saw at an event that just made you shake your head and go, really, did that just happen?
Oh, man, I tell you what, I got bunches of them. But, yeah, and when I, you know, quick your background, when I started at VP, I started in sales. I knew nothing about race fuel. And my boss at the time was, you know, he says, man, I can teach you. That's what I want. You know, you've got a good interest in hot rods and all that. And you're mechanically inclined a little bit and whatnot. So, you know, I did that, you know, I did the sales part of it until about 2006. And then that's when they moved me into management, and I managed the place here for about a year, and I wasn't really good at it. I mean, it wasn't my cup of tea at that time at 32 years old. So that's when the owner of the company said, man, you're a gearhead. Let's get you involved in the research and development side. And let's, you know, and that's when I really took a liking to the traction compound side. And, you know, we had glue, but I knew we could make it better. And that's when I started traveling and started helping out, prepping at the World Street Nationals. I think in 07 was the first year I got to help out down there with those folks. And that kind of started the whole, you know, the development of Lane Choice 7 and whatnot. And so, yeah, I mean, I've been to, you know, probably 200-300 tracks and, you know, all over the world, you know, doing this. And that's when I got to meet, you know, Tyler for the first time. So here you go. Here's one of my first ones. Mark Samples, you know, originally put on a race at Brainerd called the Battle of the States, the Outlaw Streetcar Reunion. The kind of, you know, it ended up becoming Tyler's race. But when he first started at Brainerd, Georgia, that he brought back all the old 10-5 guys. We had a race down there and whatnot. And the second one he did was at Reynolds, Georgia. And we affectionately call it the Hell Nationals. It was 106 degrees. It was the hottest I've ever seen it. The racetrack got 168 degrees.
Whoa.
Hottest I've ever seen in my life. It was freaking miserable. And we had the Nats. The Nats were the most horrible. It was like being in the pits of hell. And so I'm out there, and of course, you know, I'm pretty young into the career of track prep and whatnot. And that is when radial prep was still very new, and we were learning and whatnot. And we had just started in 2011. We had just started the idea of, let's spray the crap out of the racetrack and see if these radials stick and they don't spin, right? Well, here it is, 166 degree track, and I'd oversprayed the track. And I mean, and so like Fiscus was there and Todd Berry was there with Eric driving his car and whatnot. And they're getting out there at 300 feet and knocking the tires off. And I went out there and it was gooey and slimy. And I'm like, crap. You know, this little skinny kid comes up and he's like, hey man, I helped you scrape it. And I'm like, Oh, yeah. So here I meet Tyler Cross, for first time face to face. Knew who he was from, Holly Springs stuff and whatnot. But so he and I scraped from 330 back to the 60 in 106 degree weather. And at that time I was 260 pounds and he was like the size of a guitar neck, we get it whipped out. And then we ended up going four brooders in them. I think they ended up going 440s out there. It was crazy. I mean, and Todd Berry's, they won the event. But that was the hottest racetrack I've ever seen. Like I said, it was 166 degrees. My most upset and crazed angry moment was at Bradenton Motorsports Park at Donald Long's first event that I helped prep down there with Jeff Miller. And back then, 470s, when Will Stevenson and Perez Sr. went 470 side by side, that was like the be all end all, right? But So we get the track all prepped up, and when you do this, like I'm OCD to the bone. Like when I drag, I hate turning halfway down the track when I'm dragging a track. I want to drag it the whole way. I want the lines to all be parallel and look good. You know what I'm saying? And then after you spray it, it's like you just painted a car. You got your canvas out there, you've sprayed it. It's shiny. It's gorgeous. And I mean, you kind of like pat yourself on the back a little bit. I know every one of these track prep guys out there is thinking the same thing, that if they're listening to your podcast, they're going, yep. You put the icing on the cake, man. You're ready to blow out the candles. I turn around. I'm we're kind of, high five and joking. I turn back around and there is, I call it thatch. Okay. There is crap all over the starting line from one side to the other side. And I see red. I go, who in the double F hockey sticks just did this? I go out there. Now we're in Bradenton, Florida. Okay. What's all around Bradenton? Sand and dry grass. A photographer had jumped the wall to walk to the other side and walked straight across the starting line, and his shoes were full of sand and grass. And so I now have thatch all the way across the starting line in this heavy layer of glue. And I mean, you're looking at it, it's like someone just took the Mona Lisa and took their thumb and stuffed it on it, So that was one of the most awesome. And I'm 90% sure. And I think it was Brian Epps, but I come unglued. I'm like, who? And so needless to say, that is my favorite line now after you do track prep is, because we're like bugs to a bug zapper. When that track is freshly sprayed, somebody wants to be the first guy to step on it, and feel it. And I mean, you've seen guys jump out there too quick and fall on their butts because it's got methanol in it, it's got alcohols in it. So it's slick. It takes a second for it to flash off. And when you go down in a heap on a sticky track, I mean, it's slick for a second, but the next thing you know, you've got, it, like mousetrap glue all over you, right? But, my favorite saying is, what makes that track better? Your dirty effing shoes all over the starting line. because that's what everybody wants to do. They want to go out and stomp on it, And those are just some easy ones. I've seen some crazy stuff out there, and it's been a lot of fun. I still enjoy the track prep side of it. I don't get to do it as often. Like I said, we have a lot of folks that use our Lane Choice 7 and we've got some of the, I'll still tell you the quickest radial stuff has still all been on Lane Choice products, whether it's Wade down there, prepping for Donald, or, Jimmy doing his test, or Tyler at OSCR, like I said, Kurt Johnson and myself, like I said, it's a cool feeling to help guys go fast and have a good time. That's what I always like to tell people. I'm like, when they talk about setting records or going fast or personal bests, and I said, as long as you had fun, as long as you had a good time, and you got good data and you can go and walk away from the weekend and know that you had a good time. And like I said, we've got some of the best track prep guys out there right now. Like I said, it is an art, it's a science, and that's why these guys get, some of these guys are getting paid some really good money to go all over the world and show these new track owners and employees, how to how to do it. Spread. I say spreading the gospel, man. Yeah, spread that gospel of track prep.
It's funny you mentioned the phrase art and science when it comes to track prep and, you know, what goes into it. Because you see people all the time advertising for street racing related stuff that they got this juice and that juice and whatnot. And, yeah, I don't know what's in that stuff.
Basically, it's most of the time it's either one of my competitors' products, one of my products, and MEK or acetone and some food coloring. And that's it. And there's not a whole lot of science to that. I mean, it's just everybody wants to have their own stamp on it right now, you know?
And I think, it's like anything, the tools help to a point, like, you know, having a good product base. But there's a certain level of knowledge, I think, that goes into making sure that you're prepping a track. Because like you said, I see people say, oh, I'll just spray the track more. That's not always the answer, because you start putting too much glue down. Like you said, it becomes a goopy, soupy mess.
Well, and you got to remember what you're doing. Like I said, on an evening, all right, yeah, you can go out there and put 100 gallons of glue on it, and you're a hero. As sun pops out the next day, that glue doesn't go. It doesn't just magically leave. You know, so it turns into a soupy mess. So you have to look, you have to prepare. You know, I always joke, I said, you can't give them the best thing the first time out, because you got to look at what's, you know, going to happen. I mean, you can't have a track just full of snotty glue. And one thing, every track is different. Okay. I've got some tracks that I've been to that after you do your final spray, if you don't go out there and hit it with a drag to set the glue up, the cars won't go down the track. Some tracks, if you go out there and try to do that, they won't go down the track either. They want to run on the fresh glue. It's and you would think concrete's concrete and asphalt's asphalt.
Oh, but absolutely not.
It's not. It's textures, finishes. You know, I mean, you can talk to Kurt Johnson. You know, when Kurt showed up at Ohio Valley, and of course Tyler knows this because Tyler's helped forever with the prize fight. They put a surface, a finish on there originally that was too high and swirly. It was these big swirls, like a dude riding on one of those big fan floats, right? And it was 100,000ths high. It was rough, man. Well, then they came back in and ground it, and it's probably, it holds rubber like no surface you've ever seen. And it's amazing. And it wasn't done to any specifications or any. It was some guys said, man, we need to knock this thing down. They brought a guy in, they ground it, and it's awesome, you know. But they also scrape it every week. They've used Lane Choice 7 for 6 or 7 years exclusively. They know how to use it. They know what that track wants. Every track wants something different. And that's where the science comes into it. You know, the experience of being able to know when that track is getting ready to flip on you. You know, don't wait till the bald spot's 3 feet long. You know, when you start seeing the rubber thinning out, you start attacking that with your, you know, your rosins and your glues, and whether you got to drag it or, you know, a guy's got to burn out through the line. I mean, you know, that's the thing about being a track prep guy and knowing what's up. It's not just spraying the glue and being a hero on a cool day, you know. I mean, it's getting through the adversity and whatnot. And it's tough, you know. I mean, I'll tell you, one of the hardest things is this. Racers have become accustomed to getting the track prepped between every class, okay, between their classes. And this bit me in Memphis a few years ago. Tyler was shorthanded at his race over there, and so he gave me the reins on the track prep. And, you know, things were going well. We were flying, you know, and everything. But you got to think about it. At that time, let's say there's 32 cars in a field, all right? At 32 cars, we prep the track one time. All right, the next group of cars comes out, we prep the track again, 32 cars run, blah, blah, blah. Well, now you're in eliminations. So in qualifying, 32 cars was fine, you know, to run a complete prep on, all right? But now you're in eliminations. And let's say you're down to 32 cars total in four classes. Every class still wants you to prep in between their classes. So you're running eight cars, so you're running four pair. And then they want you to prep again, and then four pair, and then prep again. So when you think about it, you've actually only got 16 cars per lane on four preps. But before, one prep was fine. And, you know, to explain to a racer that the track doesn't need to be prepped for every, you know, every class is like pulling teeth.
Oh, yeah, but, they don't want to hear that.
You know, but then when you do prep it all the time, then you end up turning into a slimy glue pit, especially in race, in radio racing, and then you're an MF-er because, you know, the track didn't work. So, you know, that's one of the things I would encourage racers to understand, that it's based on cars. It's not based on class, you
Oh,
know.
yeah. And it's your job as a racer and a crew guy to read the track and see what's going on. And that's the one thing that I've kind of learned and picked up from helping Ray out is just that the track's going to change constantly, and it can change. The person in front of you might spin the tires and rip all the rubber up. So it's nice to be able to think that you can leave the same tune up in the car all the time. It's going to be like flypaper, but that mentality can burn you when you do that and you have that mindset and it's not there and there's no good line and you've got, the hold my beer, watch this tune up in it and you look like
Oh,
a fool.
we see it all the time. I mean, as prep people, we see it all the time. Bring the track to us. We don't want to tune our cars to the track. And I will say, when these cars get to a certain, I just had this conversation with Mark Minky when I was dropping my transmission off the other day. You know, when these cars get to a certain point, let's say like they're a 360 car, to slow that car down to a 380 is almost impossible. Because everything is, it's not just, hey, let's pull some power out of the the fuel tech or the boost controller. It's a complete chassis change, a setup change to slow down a tenth or two. You know what I mean? So it's tough, when you get to this point of tuning. I mean, to be a tuner these days is a tough gig, because most guys have the Holy Mary, swing for the fence, tune up, and then if the track's not there, then you don't know what you're
Oh, it's
doing. Yeah.
it was funny up at Milan, we're shaking down the new car blues and Ray's like, "All right, I'm just going to put this tune up and we're going to see what happens." 'Cause he's going to see what it's going to do. Car went down the track and me and Andrew, the other crew guy, looked at each other and went, "Huh. Well, that actually worked."
Yep, I know. And you're like, well, let's try something else,
Yeah, exactly. It's like, you're feeding the cracker like, "Well, like that. The numbers look good. Let's jam some more power in it."
Absolutely.
And
But
we
the thing is, man, I tell you what, there are so many just killer tuners out there right now in this sport, and it's awesome. I've seen, guys that have been my friends forever build businesses off of, helping to tune cars, and they get flown into events and get paid to do this and help guys with their program. And I mean, I completely support that. I mean, if you've got a new combo, or you've been out of the game for a while or whatever, if you think about the money that you're going to spend trying to do it yourself, if you're not well versed on your boost controller or your nitrous tune up or your paying somebody for a couple thousand bucks for a weekend, at the end of the day is going to save you thousands of dollars,
in time.
and time. I mean, if you've got to go to a track twice, you've spent that money if you can get it done in one weekend with a hired help tuner. And like I said, these guys are smart. They tune a lot of guys, other folks' cars. They've seen, it's just like track prep. Are the basics there? Yep, I can go into a track and within a day I can get it usually to where I'm comfortable with it, if they've got the right equipment and all that stuff. And trust me, all of us guys have showed up, and you've got three tractor tires on their side tied together with a chain. And my favorite was the first time I went to Brainerd. I show up and I'm like, "Where's the drag at?" And they said, "Well, there's the tractor." And they had a Kubota tractor with a bucket on the front. They had drilled two holes through the bucket in the front and took a semi tire and laid it on its side, drilled two holes through it, and bolted it to the front of the bucket. And you had to smash the tire down on its side, basically do a wheelie all the way down the track, and that was the drag. Okay,
Seems
so
legit.
that was, it was legit, man. That we went 470s, and that was unheard of back in the track t record was like a 530, and Steve Jackson went a 5 7 or 470. It was crazy, but so like I was saying, you just, there are basics to having a good tuner. Like I said, when you go to a track, we can usually get it figured out pretty quick, but a tuner can do the same thing. They can look at your tune-ups and look at the track and go, "Okay, let's start here and go out." And like I said, that's, I'm glad that these folks are able to make a living doing this, because the racers know how important, and think about it. You're on most of these engines, whether it's a nitrous or a blower or whatever, you've got probably 50 to 75 laps on the rods. So if you go out there and you burn up 20 laps trying to test, I mean, you just killed a fourth of your engine life, you know?
What's interesting too, and you've started to see this kind of come around a little bit more with the Sweet 16, is that these tuners, they tune multiple vehicles, multiple combinations. They get a look at all these combinations and a look at the same track, and it's like this domino effect that they start figuring stuff out with other cars, and they start applying it to other combinations, other cars, and there's like this wave of people going faster, and they get all this data, and now they're like, all right, we got this really good data on this surface at this time. How can we apply it elsewhere? And I think that's the biggest thing that you've seen kind of switch when, you know, people started running 360s like it was, you know, madness. It was because of what they learned at that race. And then, you know, you got your first pass in the 350s. Do you think we're going to see 340s at one point on a radial tire?
It all depends on what the rules makers do. I mean, that's what it comes down to. You know, what is your end goal? What is the end game? You know, that, and that, that's, you know, and I've talked to Donald, you know, multiple times on this, and, you know, the hard part is social media. Okay. Because I told Donald, and I said, and I'll probably catch complete hell for this, but I said, if it was me, I'd throw 100 pounds on all the combos and slow everything back. So you have great side-by-side racing, but you know what? You're not going to have those 350s anymore. You're going to have mid 360s. Okay. But you got to look at what, you know, you got to look at the group of guys. If your fields are full and you're getting the guys coming out to run and try to run 350s and 340s, then there you go. You know, in LDR, if we said, all right, guys, we're going to take 100 pounds off and everybody gets to go out there and try to go after it. In a year, our class is gone because that's not the mentality that we have right now, as that Tyler and I have, not the racers, but it's not our mentality that, you know, we want that, you know, if we wanted a 390 pass to say, hey, the next record, you know, the next step in radial drag racing is a 390 in LDR, we can make that happen, but we don't want to right now. And, you know, and guys are like, why don't you want that to happen? Well, you know what? I'd rather have a 32 car field or a 16 car field at every event, and the racers come out and enjoy it and know that they have a fighting chance if you're number 16 or number one, you know? And so do I think we'll see a 340? I mean, that's a long shot at the current rules. I don't think so, because if you look at it, you know, Sweet 16, that's like the best test session these guys will ever have. You got what, 12 shots at the track or something like that?
Oh, at least.
So, and you've got, you know, Wade's prepping like an animal on that deal. So nowhere are you going to be able to go and have that many shots at the track to try to run those numbers. So for an instance, you know, okay, so you run 358 at Georgia. The next event is Tyler's race. You know, well, there's not 12 shots to go down Bowling Green. So as a racer, am I going to go out there and throw my 358 tune-up in there? No, I'm probably going to try to throw my 365 tune-up in there and go down and qualify well and try to run the race. But, you know, Donald's race, that Sweet 16 has a whole different mentality, man. That's the swinger. Go for it. Swing for the fences. So, but to go from a 58 to a 49, I don't see where that can happen. I think you've about seen it. Now, will more guys catch up? I think so. If guys will spend the money and go do the testing and whatnot, but it's a wild deal. I just get the biggest kick out of it when, you know, and you talk about track stories, February of 2011. And again, I'll probably get flamed for this one. And, you know, like I said, but February 2011, we're going down to prep at South Georgia for Donald's event. And Joseph was the track prep guy there at the time. And Wade wasn't there yet. I think he was still, he might have still, actually, I don't even know where Wade was at that time. He was, He was out. He might have been in Memphis at that time, as a matter of fact. I can't remember. But anyways, so I get a call from David Wolf. Now, mind you, the quickest pass has been a four. I think he went a 4:42 the year before. So the quickest pass in radio racing has been a 4:42 at this time. And he calls me up, and he's like, "We can't get down this racetrack, you know, blah 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 blah." And I said, "Well, I'm almost there." I said, "Let me show up there and let's see what's up." So I get there, and you know, the track looks good. They've got the rubber down. I mean, it looks good, but guys are blowing the tires off. And that's when I had a conversation with Mark Wessler, who's our international guy, who was at the time was he had been the manager of Virginia Motorsports Park, where Tyler's at now, and you know, track prep guy, and Joseph and myself. And I said, we come to the conclusion. We said, "What happens if we just spray the crap out of this thing? And if these are radial tires, they don't want to spin. They don't want any wheel speed like a slick does. So what if we just spray the crap out of it and see what happens?" And as far as I know, that was the first time that radial prep was ever really spoken about in its own entity, you know, of how do we do a special prep just for these cars. Now, I could be wrong, and maybe someone will come up and say, "No, it was done at a certain time before, someone did it before," but as far as I know, that was the first time that anybody had ever said, "Let's try this." So Joseph goes out there and sprays the guts out of the thing. We did like a double lap on that old sprayer they had. I mean, it looked like, and again, it's the first time I'd seen that shine like that, you know, that like mirror finish. And Fiskus goes right out there and goes 4:32 or 4:33. And that was the, you know, picked up a 10th. That was the quickest, you know, radial pass ever. And then it was so funny. You saw he and David Wolf chasing each other to the staging lanes in testing. And it was awesome. But you know what we found out on Sunday morning eliminations? Sun popped out and it was a grease pit because we didn't know that the, you know, we'd never done it. And they all blew the tires off. And boy, we went from heroes to zeros real quick.
It's like being a test pilot.
It was. And that was the first time. But that was, you know, that I think kind of started the idea of now let's, and it's expanded from there, and everybody's got their ideas. You know, people like to mix their stuff together. Me, I'd like to use straight lane choice 7 because, you know, I spent all those years traveling all over trying to perfect a glue. And, you know, I know everybody likes to be their own chemist, but at the end of the day, you know, most of the records are still set on, you know, straight lane choice 7, man. And I'm not using that as a gratuitous, you know, advertisement for VP, but, you know, I know, like I said, Wade now in Radio Versus the World stuff, you know, that is a mix of VP products. You know, that's what Wade knows what he's doing and likes to mix things together. But as far as it, like, you know, Tyler's event and, you know, my events, you know, that's straight lane choice 7, you know? So.
And what does it take, you know, with lane choice 7, you know, with glue in general, what do you guys do to make that work so well that you can talk about? It's not a crazy proprietary secret.
No, I mean, go out and have experimentations. I mean, you know, we used to have a product called lane choice 6. It was amazing. And there was a guy named Darren that used to, he was the track prep guy at Sunshine Dragway in Florida. And that track was always hotter than all get out, man. It was hot and awesome track. I'm kind of pretty sure that's like where Donald started, you know, that's kind of like where radial racing in the South, really in Florida, started. They used to do a Friday night shoot up, him and Will Stevenson and Shannon Wren and all those guys, you know, used to go down there. Well, that stuff was amazing in the heat. I mean, and Darren would go out there and spray it like 6 hours ahead of time and put a huge lap on it. But as soon as the sun went down, if you weren't careful and it got cool, that stuff turned to plastic. And that's, I mean, glue is essentially resin and adhesives, and resin is plastic. So, you know, if it got cold, it would shell over. So you look at, you've got a product that's awesome in the heat, but not as good in the cold. And so our competitor, the old VHT, they're like, man, that's better in the cold. So you start looking at what's the properties of that. And you start looking at making mixtures and blends and whatnot. And that's kind of where, you know, lane choice 7 came about, you know, with our chemist down in Texas. And I would go out and try different blends. I think I tried 10 different versions until we came out with, you know, with 7, which works well in the cold and works, you know, that's what the threes and the freeze were, was straight 7. And the track was 52 degrees, you know, and then again, 160 some degrees in Reynolds, Georgia. So, and it's not, you just go out there and spray it the same. You have to do different techniques and spray lighter. And, sometimes you cut a little methanol in it when it's smoking hot, and things like that. But, it took just feet on the ground. Like I said, that's one summer I went 14 times to Florida, working with the folks at Orlando and at Sunshine they used to have Central. I think there was a track in Orlando that used to be right downtown. There was a little short track that we used to work with, and Central Florida, I think it was called, or something, Florida Complex. The final product of Lane Choice 7 was figured out at South Georgia Motorsports Park when Roland used to own it. And we went out there, and his super comp cars were having problems, and we got it figured out, and they got right down, and that's kind of where it ended up. But it all comes down to knowing what the track is, the temperatures, how much to spray, when to scrape, just things like that. It's like I said, it's an art and a science, that's for sure.
Awesome. That's kind of an interesting little peek behind the scenes on what all went into that.
Yeah, there was a lot of travel. Like I said, I mean, I went to England a couple times, and I know that, they use our product quite a bit in Australia, and I'm on the phone with our guys there all the time. And we've got, in the world, we have quite a few tracks that use the Lane Choice 7. And so it's pretty cool. I mean, our competitor, it's old product, it's old technology, NHRA still uses it. I mean, that's what works well for them. We've tried like hell to get them to, try our stuff. We've ran fuel cars on 7. We did it at Norwalk when Kurt Johnson was the manager out there for Night Under Fire, we went fast on it. It's just, there's a lot of, you got to think about it, man. When people get used to something, you got a product that's been out for 40 years, and they don't like to change. I consider Lane Choice 7 new technology. It's new. It's latest, greatest. We're still not running 12 seconds in the quarter mile. We're running fives in the quarter mile indoor cars. So you need to look at that. We're putting down 4,000 plus horsepower on a small radial tire. 40-year-old product has a hard time doing that. The technology isn't there.
That makes total sense for sure. Well, our time's here coming to a close, Jason. I like to give my guests a chance to kind of do their plugs and shout outs and what's going on. So, why don't you tell everybody where they can see Jason Ruckert, what they can expect from VP, and, just give us the old John Force rundown kind of deal.
The old John Force rundown? Well, like I said, as far as VP Racing Fuels, you can always go to our website, vpracingfuels.com. Like I said, we have the best fuels and the best traction compound in the world. There's no doubt about it. And that's just the way that it is. And, case closed on that. I appreciate everything, all of the support over the years buying our products. You help put shoes on my kids' feet. And like I said, we got five of them in the house. So, we have a lot of shoes. You'll see me at most of the radial tire events. I try to make it out to most of them. Also see me, we've got a really good dirt track contingent going on. We've got the Summer Nationals going on right now. So you're going to see me at some late model and modified events and whatnot. Personally, like I said, we're going to hopefully get the hot rod out here shortly. I've missed it. We've been bracket racing. Kyla's been racing. We're actually putting a power glide in the car right now to go try to do some index racing. She wants to start coming off the button instead of foot braking. So like I said, the next event that drag racing wise that I should be at will be the Sundown Nationals at Crossville, where our next limited drag radial points race. Again, like I said, I appreciate you giving me the time to be on your podcast. And again, anybody can get a hold of me on Facebook or social media if they got any questions on track prep or fuels. And like I said, we've got a great tech staff. We got, on the work side. And next time you get to see Pitfall Harry, my band from college play will be in October 12th here in Terre Haute at Charlie's Pub and Grub. Should be an outside show if it's not too cold out. If not, we play inside. We've had some of our racers come out and see us do some jamming. The Jones family from Huntsville came out and seen us play. Matt Bell and his wife swung by back in April and Sauce play. So we still like to get down and pretend like we're 23, even though we're 45. So
the hangover just hurt worse, right?
Oh, that, hey, you know what? We have to drink a water in between each beer. That is for sure. You know, the Busch Lights are a little rough, especially, you know, since I'm 50 pounds lighter now, I can't quite drink as many. But so again, like I said, I just want to, you know, thank everybody for the support for VP, you know, all you racers and fans for Limited Drag Radio, you know, keep on spreading the gospel of VP Traction Compound and rock and roll, man.
Awesome, Jason. Thanks for coming on the show, and we look forward to seeing you in the future.
All right, thanks, man.
Well, that wraps up the show this week. Thanks for Jason for coming on and talking with us. And always, may reaction times be crisp, your win lights bright. Stay safe out there, folks.